Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. 119 million people are expected to travel 50 miles or more from home over the holidays, according to a forecast by AAA. If that happens, it will break a pre-pandemic record set back in 2019. Of course, that all depends on the weather. So joining the exchange to provide more insight into the weather is JPR's own meteorologist, Milt Radford. Hey, Milt.
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
Excellent. What are your travel plans for the holidays?
Well, I don't have any this year. Most years we do stay at home. I have family that ranges all the way from Alaska to Texas and closer by family in Portland and in Sacramento. The ones in Portland and Sacramento not coming this year. So a relatively small gathering. The wife and I and a couple of kids and grandkids that live here in the Medford area. So we'll kind of all get together this year.
Well, I'm the same way. I'm not going anywhere, but I do have to travel to get to work, and there was fog out there this morning.
Yeah, pretty thick. We've had some clear nights and rain that has come through in recent days, so the ground is pretty saturated. It's kind of a heavy fog still around Ashland this morning, but quite a few of the valleys this morning had some of this fog. That's definitely something you see this time of year.
Is it predictable? I mean, can they?
Well, for the most part, it is. Yeah, if you look at some of those values, again, how saturated the atmosphere might be or how wet the ground might be, that plays another role in development of fog and how close the temperature is getting to the dew point and the atmosphere becoming fully saturated. A lot of those things, for the most part, there are things that can intervene. Maybe a temperature won't drop as much as meteorologists predict, and that might affect the amount of fog that develops. But, yeah, for the most part.
How far in advance can they tell?
Well, you can at least 3 or 4 days out as a general rule of thumb.
Okay. Well, we've been having some pretty unpredictable weather over the past couple of months or so, that bomb cyclone that came.
Yes.
I didn't even know what that was.
Yeah, the term is actually bombogenesis, and which is a meteorological term. And I don't know if it was the media or somebody else who came up with this name of bomb cyclone. But basically, it's generally speaking when the atmospheric pressure drops 24 millibars in 24 hours. There's no magic to that 24, but it just happens to be a very good rule of thumb. And when you see that, you can develop some pretty strong winds and heavy precipitation that will come in with that. And of course, for ships out at sea, it can be a very dangerous situation. And it can even, inland can cause some pretty severe consequences. A lot of the times you might get a bomb cyclone, and it doesn't amount to much, just a little bit windy and some rain. But other times, yeah, it can be pretty serious.
Well, there are truckers out there all the time, so I imagine that's pretty serious for them.
It is. You know, in our area, when you're looking at going over passes and traveling long distances, especially in our region where you have very different weather both east and west of the Cascades, then, yeah, you can run into some of these strong weather patterns that can have a big impact, especially if you're driving a tall vehicle.
Well, we have the Siskiyou Pass right here between Oregon and California, and that thing shuts down when the weather turns bad.
That's right. It's the highest pass on I-5, and it's up above 4,000 feet, and that's into the zone where you can see as a front comes in, some of that rain will change to snow or even some icy conditions. You get that as a big problem even when you don't have a lot of snow at the Siskiyou Summit. And, of course, usually there'll be a warning that's sufficient to say you need to chain up. And there will be authorities out there that won't let you go over the pass if you have a car with rear-wheel drive and ball tires. So you better make sure you've got – it's always good to have those chains in the back no matter what kind of vehicle you have. Even a four-wheel drive, sometimes we get a misconception. If you have studded tires, it can get over the pass. But it depends on how old your tires are, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, what can we anticipate, if not expect, over the holidays for the weather leading up to New Year's?
We're starting to go into a different pattern beginning Friday night into Saturday and then Sunday, and especially in the days from the 24th through the 28th. It's not uncommon for this time of year to get a series of fronts that come through. And in Oregon and Northern California, we sometimes see what we call progressive fronts. Each one, over a period of 2, 3, or 4 fronts that come in, will get stronger. The first one will be kind of a practice front, I call it. It won't amount to much, and that's probably what we'll see Friday night into Saturday. But unfortunately, as we get out closer to Christmas, that one on the 24th could be quite a bit stronger. And that could produce, we talked about the Siskiyou Summit, any of the higher passes could see some potential snowfall and gusty winds, perhaps a winter weather advisory that is in effect, or a warning. And a warning, of course, is stronger than the others, that something is imminent and about to happen. So that's one issue with that time frame. I don't know how many people will be traveling by car on the 24th. And, of course, in between is when we see the fog, when it dries out briefly. That's more of a concern for people who are flying. You know, does the airport get socked in, and as a result you miss connecting flights wherever you're headed?
Yeah, that's happened to me in San Francisco a lot.
Yes, those are the two big things for our region, either trying to get over the passes, Lake of the Woods, there's quite a few up near Diamond Lake, there's a number of them, Snowman Summit, several places where it's the issue will be snow or ice, and then at lower elevations in between those fronts, the fog.
Okay, so what if you're in Northern California or near the coast? What can you expect?
For those areas, I would primarily be looking at foggy conditions for the Northern California coast. For Northern California, you may see, depending on the angle that the front comes in, it's a little far out to say right now, but around Mount Shasta and Weed and through that area, there's always the potential for some heavy snow that might fall. We'll know better in a couple, 3 days if that's going to be an issue on that front coming in on the 24th.
Do they ever shut down I-5 because of snow?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that in the almost 20 years that I've lived here. I've seen that happen several times.
My guest is JPR's own meteorologist, Milt Radford. As we head into the holiday season, AAA is anticipating a record number of travelers, if the weather permits. So we asked Milt to put his reputation on the line and predict the weather. How do meteorologists predict the weather each day?
Well, there's a variety of methods, but the two main ones, one is to use numbers and number-based meteorology. And basically, worldwide, you have all of these supercomputers. Many countries have their own or multiple supercomputers that are all networked together. And these produce literally billions of calculations per second. So the weather is constantly being changed in the forecast, which makes it trickier for a meteorologist if you think the forecast is going one way and then it suddenly goes another. So to look at numerical forecasting is one way. The second way is to look at imagery that you have. We have so much better imagery now from satellites to look down and see what's happening. Radar and satellite meteorology has really dramatically improved the forecasting. When you can see a front that is coming in, and we can see that a lot in Oregon and Northern California, the front swing in from the Pacific. And so we can time those out and say, okay, I think that'll be here Friday night or early Saturday morning. So those are probably the two main. There's also maps that are produced primarily, not so much by hand anymore, but primarily from computers. And those can show or relay a lot of information, especially on how strong fronts might be.
You know, one of the things that my wife did, we homeschool our kids. So one of the things she did with our 12 and 13-year-old boys is took them to the weather station on, you know, just a field trip, see how they do what they do. And they actually launched a balloon.
Yes, yes. Twice a day at a number of places around the country, National Weather Service sites that are manned, they will launch a balloon. And as that balloon goes up through different layers of the atmosphere, it will record things, you know, like precipitation level and temperature and maybe wind speed and all of that. And then that data is compiled by the local weather service site. Meteorology, winds can be very different at different elevations and coming from different vectors, different directions. So this provides, it seems like a low-tech solution, but it relays this information back. And if you find one of those, you could keep it or you could send it back, postage paid, I believe, to the National Weather Service, and they'll, you know, recondition it if possible. Some of these little devices that record all of this information, they get pretty banged up once they come back down to Earth. But yeah, they do that all over the country.
So I guess that's how they determine where we have atmospheric rivers.
That's right. And that's a thing here. A lot of atmospheric rivers begin in the tropics, especially around Hawaii. Sometimes they're called the Pineapple Express. They range from California all the way to Alaska. And they come in, they look like a river in the sky, all the clouds, and it's a long, thin line. But it can give you not always heavy rain, but it can give you consistent rain that can last for days if this has a particularly long fetch to it. And some of these do. So we certainly get our atmospheric rivers here in the Northwest.
How did those atmospheric rivers affect air travel, planes?
They don't affect planes necessarily as much. They could divert around it. One of the things, they bring a lot of rain in. So if you're in a low-lying area that's prone to floods, that could be a bigger problem for people who live in those kind of locations.
Well, JPR's listening range is pretty broad, as you know, covering
yes.
Southern Oregon and Northern California and reaching the coasts of both states. The weather can range quite a bit.
It makes it really tricky to predict what is happening at the coast, the coastal range, the valleys, the Cascades, the high steppe or high desert regions out toward the east across Southern Oregon and Northern California. Back when I did TV weather, I produced four or five five-day forecasts for our region. I probably could have produced eight because there's so many just different regions and different climatologies that we have to deal with. We are considered a northern boundary Mediterranean climate. So California is a Southern California is a southern type of Mediterranean climate. If you've ever been to the Mediterranean, for example, Medford has a climate that's very similar to Madrid, Spain. So if you can't afford to go to Madrid on vacation, just go to Medford on vacation. You'll be fine. I don't know if we have the same cultural things in Medford that they do there, but
well, my daughter just came back from Barcelona, so
well, there you go. Very, very close to this climate in terms of the profile of precipitation through the year and the temperatures and all of that. But yeah, it's such a diverse climate here; it can be very tricky for producing or trying to forecast the weather.
Well, safety is always a good rule of thumb. Safety first. So what should travelers consider if they're driving long distances? AAA expects more than 107 million out of that 119 million travelers this holiday season to drive round trip.
You know, instead of quoting myself, I'll quote a couple of people. First, my father. He always said, have a plan B. Try to have a plan B. And if plan A doesn't work out, try to laugh about it and move on and just enjoy whatever plan B is. For travelers, I will quote a longtime friend of mine who was an Alaska State Trooper when I worked up there, and he said, whatever the speed limit is, let's say it's 50 miles per hour, and for some bad weather event is coming in, snow in the winter, which was typical in Alaska, if it's snowy, reduce your speed by 10 miles per hour, and then reduce it by another 10 because you're not as good a driver as you think you are. He saw a lot of tragic accidents, deaths, and injuries, and car wrecks and things, and he said, you know, people need to slow down. If they just slow down in bad weather, it's better to get there alive than, you know, not getting there, you know, or worrying about being late at getting to a location.
Particularly if it's foggy.
Yes, especially if it's foggy.
Like today.
Yes.
And you were telling a story in the newsroom this morning about fog and how it affects trees.
Oh, yeah, it does. You know, like when you look at one of the reasons that we have with the redwoods, the sequoias and everything is because of the foggy climate. It actually, you don't necessarily think of fog as being a lot of precipitation, but all fog is a cloud, a ground level cloud. That's all it is. And so if you have a wet climate that's wet a lot of the day, a lot of the time, a lot of the year, you don't need as much rain for things to grow healthy. It's just like a light dusting of precipitation. You mist the plants in your home. This is like misting the big trees in our area.
Well, I love that story, and thank you for joining me on the exchange today. My guest was Milt Radford, JPR's own meteorologist. Thanks, Milt.
It's good to be here today.